Welcome here to the Road of Wisdom class, session 13. We're going to be continuing, as we did last time, and talking about some of the things that wisdom teaches. This session is the Teaching of Wisdom, part 2. We're going to survey again a couple topics and try to learn what Proverbs teaches about how to be wise in these categories. The first category or topic is marriage. The book of Proverbs presents marriage as one of the main arenas in which wisdom is either practiced or neglected. Proverbs treats marriage not just like a social arrangement, but as a sacred covenant where character, faithfulness, speech, work, and the fear of Yahweh are all tested daily. In Proverbs, marriage is not made strong merely by romance or beauty or money or social convenience. It is made strong by wisdom. First, Proverbs teaches that marriage is a covenant before God. Proverbs warns men because Proverbs is primarily male-oriented in its delivery, as we talked about in previous sessions. It warns men about going after the forbidden or the foreign woman. Now, this woman is a generic figure in Proverbs that represents any woman who is outside the marriage covenant. Proverbs describes her as one who leaves the mate of her youth and has forgotten the covenant she made before her God. That's in Proverbs chapter 2, verse 17. This is important because it shows that marital unfaithfulness is not simply a private issue between two people. It is a betrayal of the covenant made in the sight of God, our Creator. Marriage, then, is holy and must be treated as such and protected. The marriage covenant is much like a fence that is put around a garden. The fence is meant to protect the plants that grow inside it. In marriage, the covenant protects the trust, the affection, the children, the family stability, and the peace that are meant to grow there and flourish. Now, just like when the garden fence is broken down and the garden becomes vulnerable to the destructive animals that live nearby, so too, when the covenant of marriage is not upheld, the marriage relationship will suffer harm. The first thing that we can note in Proverbs about marriage is that Proverbs says that a good spouse is a gift from Yahweh. In Proverbs chapter 18, verse 22, it says, "He who finds a wife finds a good thing, and he obtains favor from Yahweh." Now, this verse, don't get me wrong, it doesn't view the wife as a possession, but she's a blessing that the man receives. And you can generalize it to a spouse in general. It could be the wife who gets a husband. The spouse is a blessing. But that's kind of the key right there, is that a wise marriage begins with having gratitude to Yahweh. A husband who sees his wife as a favor from Yahweh, meaning Yahweh's favor is upon him in receiving this blessing, then the man will not treat her casually, harshly, or selfishly. Likewise, this principle can be applied more broadly, that the person who receives a spouse receives something extremely valuable. Imagine that you're gifted a grand estate as an inheritance, but you're not mindful to maintain or take care of it. The home and the property would soon decay and be overgrown with weeds and would not be a place that anyone would want to live in. In the same way, marriage is an extremely valuable gift from God that must be cherished, protected, and maintained. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 14 adds another perspective to this. It says, "A house and wealth are the inheritance from fathers, but an insightful wife is from Yahweh." Parents may pass down property, money, or social standing, but Wisdom is in a spouse, but wisdom in a spouse is a blessing only from God. Only God can give a person a spouse who is insightful or who has wisdom. Now, this proverb shifts the standard in choosing, well, who is a good spouse? Essentially, it is saying, do not only ask, is this person attractive? Do I like this person? Or will I enjoy being with this person? Well, those are necessary questions to ask. A person should also ask, is this person insightful? Do they have wisdom? Does this person live with the fear of Yahweh? Will this person help build a wise household? A marriage built only on external features is like a beautiful house that's built on top of a sinkhole. It might look really nice until something happens and all of it collapses into the earth. Proverbs also celebrates marital intimacy, but it warns against the spouse seeking satisfaction outside the covenant. In Proverbs chapter 5, verses 15 and 16, it says, drink water from your own cistern and fresh water from the midst of your own well. Should your springs overflow outside? Streams of water in the public plazas? In biblical geography, the land of ancient Israel was largely, for a large part of the year, a dry and arid land where water was precious and it was something refreshing and life-giving. The imagery here in Proverbs chapter 5 is teaching that marital love or marital intimacy, which is being spoken of metaphorically as water in your own cistern, which means within your own marriage, where that water is held and able to be enjoyed, that it's supposed to be enjoyed inside one's own marriage covenant and not to be shared with others. That means it's not to your water is not to overflow into the streets, into the public plazas. This proverb is not embarrassed by lauding marital affection. Rather, it is wholeheartedly endorsing it. Marital fidelity is not just about avoiding adultery. It is way more than that. It is the active choice to delight in one's spouse. A husband or wife who neglects showing affection at home may become vulnerable to the temptation of pleasure elsewhere. And so Proverbs teaches that wisdom does not merely avoid the pursuit of sin and foolishness, but a person must nourish the right kind of love in their marriage that makes sinful temptations less powerful. Proverbs is equally realistic about the damage that can be caused by destructive behavior between spouses. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 4 says, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who acts shamefully is like decay in his bones. A crown brings honor, dignity, and public respect. However, a wife who acts shamefully brings decay into the bones, which implies weakness and pain. This proverb is teaching that a spouse's character affects the whole life of the other spouse. And this is true in both directions, husbands and wives. Here it says that the wife who acts shamefully is causing this decay in her husband's bones, but a faithful, wise spouse strengthens the home for the other from within, while this shameful conduct slowly eats away at that conflict and the peace and their reputation. This picture is very vivid because some marital problems are not like bombs going off and loud explosions, but are maybe more like just a quiet riot inside, you know, their soul. Wisdom attends to the character of a person before that damage becomes visible to others. Proverbs also warns against allowing continual conflict to be present in marriage. In Proverbs chapter 21, verse 9, it says, "It is better to live on the corner of a rooftop than in a house with a contentious wife." The point is not that husbands are just innocent and wives are always the problem. Proverbs often uses these sort of concrete examples that we've discussed before, such as here speaking to husbands and talking to them about their wives. It uses these concrete examples to teach universal truths that apply to everyone. Universal wisdom that applies to everyone. The principle here is that constant strife can make even a comfortable house feel hostile and just unlivable. In the imagery given in the proverb, living on a rooftop corner is a place that is exposed outside. It's inconvenient and it's lonely. Yet Proverbs says that a person may feel it is preferable than living in a home that is filled with frequent quarreling. Anyone who has felt recurring tension at the dinner table with their family can probably relate to this proverb. A large house cannot compensate for a lack of love. Household peace is one of the greatest forms of wealth in a marriage. Finally, Proverbs teaches that the value of wisely choosing a spouse cannot be overestimated. And one of the best criteria to consider is whether the other person's life is rooted in the fear of Yahweh. Proverbs chapter 31, verse 30 says, "Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears Yahweh, she will be praised." This verse does not deny that a woman's charm and beauty may be pleasant. Rather, it puts those two characteristics in their proper place or proper perspective. Charm can be manipulative and can shift, and all beauty changes over time. But it's the inner character, it's the fear of Yahweh that produces these enduring virtues in a person, such as faithfulness, diligence, generosity, wise speech, gentleness, and mercy. And so Proverbs teaches that marriage is a covenant. It's a gift from Yahweh. It's a place that we're to delight in, and it's a place where wisdom must dwell. It calls husbands and wives to gratitude, fidelity to one another, having peaceful speech, being hardworking at the relationship, and demonstrating godly character to each other. And this wisdom is practical because marriage is practical. Two people must decide every day whether they're going to build or weaken their life together and each other. A marriage that is shaped by the wisdom of Proverbs is not picture perfect, but it is one that Proverbs says will be blessed. It will be enjoyable. It will be satisfying. To get there, however, a couple must fear Yahweh. They must guard the covenant they've made between each other. They must delight in being faithful to each other and to God. And they must avoid corrosive conflict. And they need to prize godly character above all else. Such a marriage will become what Proverbs says wisdom always builds, a house that will stand. The next topic that we're going to look at is parenting and children. The book of Proverbs presents parenting as one of life's most serious callings. The home is not treated as a private space where the kid's character or the parent's character, for that matter, just happens by accident. However, it is one of the first schools of wisdom. The information that Proverbs offers helps family life become stable and founded upon wisdom, so that parents become stewards of wisdom and children are the recipients and the learners that are standing at the feet of the teachers. The goal is not to kind of just get obedience out of your children. It's rather to set them on a lifelong path toward righteousness, toward prudence and having and living with the fear of Yahweh. Proverbs begins to talk about this topic by placing both the father and the mother in like positions of moral and spiritual authority in the household. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8, it says, "Listen, my son, to your father's teaching, and do not ignore the instruction of your mother." Now, this verse is very important, and there are many more like it in Proverbs, because it shows that wisdom is not pictured as just coming from one parent alone, like, say, the father. Rather, the father teaches and the mother instructs, and they are both working together to help the child grow in wisdom. A child who wants wisdom must learn to listen to both their father and their mother. And in everyday terms, this means that parents should not undermine each other, and children should not be playing one parent against the other. A household that is strong and founded upon wisdom is where the father says one thing and the mother says another thing, and they agree together rather than sowing confusion among their children. And so a household based on wisdom speaks with a united moral purpose, and that gives a child stability and understanding in how to grow in wisdom. Now, the same idea appears in chapter 4, verses 1 through 4, which say, "Listen, O sons, to the teaching of a father, and pay attention in order to learn understanding. For I give good teaching to you all. Do not abandon my instruction. When I was a son with my father, a tender and only son in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, 'Let your heart hold on to my words. Keep my commandments and live.'" This passage here in Proverbs is showing that wisdom is moving from one generation to the next. The writer here, likely Solomon, is speaking about how he received wisdom from his father, and he was like a son being taught by his father and his mother. And therefore, he's passing it on to his son, and he's encouraging his son to listen to him in the way that he listened to his parents. The father here is not inventing the values of wisdom on the spot. He's passing down a wisdom tradition he's received. It's almost like a family heirloom, except the treasure's not some fancy silverware, but it's rather the skill of wise living. Proverbs also emphasizes that children need correction, not just advice or guidance. A parent's task is not only to explain and teach wisdom, but to intervene when a child begins to walk toward foolishness. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 17 says, "Correct your son, and he will give you rest, and he will give delight to your soul." The wisdom of this proverb is that correction looks beyond the momentary discomfort to rather the effect and the fruit that will come later. No child enjoys being corrected at the time, and few parents probably really enjoy giving correction. It can be emotionally tiring to just constantly confront bad attitudes, dishonesty, laziness, or disrespect. Yet, Proverbs teaches that faithful, consistent correction by the parents produces for them rest. The Hebrew word translated rest here can refer to comfort or peace of mind. In other words, a child that receives correction becomes a source of peace for the parents rather than anxiety, and a source of delight rather than grief or sorrow. Think of how a child learns to ride a bicycle. At first, the parent must hold the seat and kind of steady the handlebars and walk alongside them and warn them not to like make sharp turns. Well, as the child begins to ride better and the parent lets go to allow the child to pedal themselves a little bit, sometimes the parent must catch the child as they lose their balance and begin to fall. All along, the child may complain to the parent, "Let go, let go. I can do it. I can do it on my own." But the wise parent knows that too much freedom too soon leads to injury and pain. Proverbs does not picture parental oversight and correction as being like controlling or being like a helicopter parent, but as loving guidance that helps a child gain the right moral perspective and understanding of the world that is needed for successful living. And this proverb also reminds parents not to measure success or failure by immediate reactions from the children. A child may resist correction. I mean, they probably will. I don't know a child that doesn't resist correction initially. And so it might be tough today, but eventually children will often listen and will benefit from it years later. The goal is not to win the argument or to have the child just immediately get it right now, but to shape their life so that it will eventually bring you, as a parent, peace and joy. And this is where Proverbs becomes especially focused, where a parent might say to the child, "Come here," 6 times before the child acts. Without intending to, the parent is training the child to ignore the first 5 times. Or if a parent says, "You better do it before I count to 3, well, what is happening? The parent is essentially telling their child they don't need to obey until you say the word 3. Proverbs urges parents to see that children are always being trained by everything that they experience. The question is not whether training is happening. The question is by who and what kind. Proverbs speaks honestly about a child's need for discipline and correction. In chapter 13, verse 24, it says, "The one who withholds his rod hates his son, but the one who loves him desires discipline for him." This proverb can maybe sound a little severe to modern ears, but its central wisdom is that love does not abandon a child to their own foolishness. While some may think that imposing discipline upon a child is overbearing, discipline is not the opposite of love. If rightly understood, discipline is one ingredient that actually love requires. Of course, Proverbs does not justify cruelty or rage, shaming, or humiliation or abuse in the disciplining of children. The point is not that parents should be overly harsh, but that they are to care enough to correct and enact discipline quickly. A doctor who refuses to treat an infection because the medicine tastes bitter is not being kind. And if the doctor wants to see how the patient will fare on their own, may realize that their treatment is now too late to be administered. Likewise, a parent who refuses to correct their child may be avoiding the discomfort or the feeling of annoyance for having to do it over and over again, rather than seeing it as a necessary part of the child's development and character building for their own good. And another proverb that reinforces the same principle is Proverbs chapter 25, verse 15, which says, "A rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who's left to himself puts his mother to shame." Children need explanations as much as they need boundaries. Wisdom here is said to come through a rod and a reproof. Discipline without instruction, without the reproof, or instruction without correction, they all just don't have the intended effect. Wise parenting must join the two together. If you have a tree that's growing in your yard, when it's small, if it is growing crooked, you can put a brace to straighten it because it's more flexible. But after a while, after it grows, the trunk becomes more rigid. It becomes more difficult to then have it bend up and grow straight if it has begun to grow sideways. The support stake next to the young tree is not there to somehow intimidate or to, you know, insult the tree as needing to have some help. It is there to support the tree so it can grow strong to stand on its own and grow up as in upward as it is intended to. Proverbs also teaches that honoring parents, that children honoring parents is meant to be lifelong. In Proverbs chapter 23, verses 22 to 25, it says, "Listen to your father who begot you, and do not show contempt for your mother when she is old. Get truth and do not sell it. Get wisdom and teaching and understanding. The father of a righteous person will rejoice exceedingly, and the man who fathers a wise son will delight in him. May your father and your mother be glad, and may she who gave birth to you rejoice." This verse moves from childhood and beyond, because a son or daughter who grows up may become stronger, wealthier, or more educated than their parents. But wisdom forbids them from developing contempt. The older parents may move slower, they may end up repeating themselves, or need help in their older age, but they're not to be viewed as a burden. Proverbs insists that children view gratitude toward their parents as a mark of maturity. And the child who once depended on a mother's patience must in return show patience to them when they are older. And the emotional bond between parents and children is something that Proverbs also addresses. In chapter 23, verses 24 and 25 here, it shows that the children's choices are never just a private or personal matter for them. What they do in life affects their parents or reflects onto their parents. So thereby, their choices either bring grief to them or joy to them. And so many young people imagine that their choices are their own and they're, you know, they have to live with the consequences of their choices. Well, that is true, but it's not just their consequences alone by which their choices affect others. You know, it's not just themselves, it is also their family and particularly their parents. And so the idea here is that a wise child will grow up and live in a way that reflects positively on their family, on their parents, and to understand that what they do affects more than just themselves. And it's also true with the opposite, where, like in chapter 17, verse 25, it says, "A foolish son is grief to his father and bitterness to the woman who bore him, whereas a wise son is joyful and a delight to his parents." So the foolish son is bitterness and grief to his parents. A child's foolishness can wound the very people who love him the most and are the closest to him. The mother who carried the child now has to bear the bitterness of seeing her son go astray and hurt themselves through foolish behavior. And lastly, Proverbs gives this wonderful picture of the generational blessing of children. In chapter 17, verse 6, it says, "The crown of old men is their children's children, and the glory of children is their fathers." Parenting is therefore not only about surviving the younger years of the toddlers or the conflict-ridden years of the teenagers. It's about the legacy that is formed, where a grandparent being surrounded by their grandchildren who walk in wisdom is like them wearing a crown. It is a form of honor. It is a form of dignity. And so therefore, a child who can look back on gratitude to his faithful parents, it sort of like possesses this form of glory for them. And so to summarize, Proverbs teaches that parenting must be active, must be done with both parents being unified and showing loving correction that will last for their, you know, when they're in their house and beyond as they become adults. And good parenting will become a generational legacy where wisdom gets passed down from parents to children and to then from those children to their children. Parents are called to teach, train, and discipline and model the wisdom for their children. And children are called to listen, to honor, to receive instruction and reproof, and to understand that their choices affect the whole family. The home in Proverbs is where wisdom is sort of first put to the test. It's where children learn how to walk that road of wisdom before they then leave the house and set off on their own to walk it. The last topic we're going to look at in this session are, what does wisdom teach about friends and neighbors? The book of Proverbs treats friendship and neighborliness also as a place to test wisdom. The friend or the neighbor is not merely someone who is just like helpful or pleasant to have around, who lives, you know, nearby. This person is part of the world in which the wisdom is supposed to be demonstrated, and in which, as Proverbs emphasizes, they're typically a close companion, somebody that is knowledgeable of your life, or somehow a fellow member of the community to which you belong. And so this it can range from anywhere from a close, you know, confidant who maybe lives right next door to you, to somebody that maybe you see down the street every now and then. And so these can comprise any number of ordinary social relationships for exercising wisdom. Proverbs teaches that true friendship is a relationship that is marked by loyalty. As Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for times of distress. This is not some shallow friendship of convenience. It's the kind of friendship that remains even when circumstances become difficult or cloudy. And many people enjoy lots of friends when that relationship is easy, and when there's no conflict and there's no adversity going on in life. But Proverbs praises the person who has friends who remain with them in times of trouble, in times of distress. We might picture someone who's like perhaps has to sit in a hospital room to await some news about a diagnosis. Or perhaps somebody who has to spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to solve a crisis in their life. Friends that stand by you during these times are the ones who are truly friends, because they love you at all times. And that kind of friend is essentially like a brother to you in your hour of distress. Proverbs 18:24 says, a person has many friends to socialize with, but there is one who loves him who sticks closer than a brother. This is kind of a very realistic picture of our social lives. There's a lot of people that we can socialize with who are, quote, our friends. But there are sometimes other friends who are different kind of friends. They have sort of this extra degree of loyalty to our friendship. One person might be a friend who, you know, helps make us laugh, or the other person kind of is a person that we can hang out with and do shared activities with. But there is a type of friend, Proverbs is saying, who sticks closer to you than actually your brother. Somebody who loves you at all times. That is a friend that that wisdom tells us we must cherish. Yet Proverbs balances this closeness of friendships with other social boundaries, particularly with regard to friendly neighbors. In Proverbs chapter 25, verse 17, it says, let your foot visit your neighbor's house sparingly, so that he does not have too much of you and hate you. Now, this is referring to like a friendly neighbor who you would visit, you know, frequently, not like just a neighbor that you have to knock on the door because you saw that their mail got spilled out of their mailbox and you're taking it to them out of courtesy. Here, Proverbs is a little bit humorous about it, but it's something that's extremely true. Even good relationships like a friendly neighbor can be damaged if you are being a careless nuisance to them. A neighbor may love you, but that doesn't mean that they would appreciate it if you come over all the time to talk to them, to consume their time, to invade their privacy, or to drain them of their emotional energy. Wisdom knows when to go knock on the door and when to stay home. Good neighbors, you might think of it this way. Good neighbors are like ice cream. A little bit every now and then is sweet and it's a delight. But eating it every day or too much all at once can become unpleasant or at least definitely unhealthy. Proverbs also warns that being aware of timing in relationships matters. With regard to friendship and friendly neighbors, Proverbs chapter 24, 17 says, "The one who blesses his friend with a loud voice in the early morning, it will be regarded as a curse to him." How many of us want to hear someone yelling outside of our door or pounding on the door early in the morning? Even a wonderful neighbor can be a pain in the behind if they just lack sensitivity to timing. The issue is not merely what is said, it's when it's said, it's how it's said. And this applies to our modern day as well as it does the ancient times as well. An encouraging phone call may be welcome in the afternoon, but it's probably deemed intrusive and unwanted in the middle of the night. Wisdom considers other people's situations and circumstances, and not only their own good intentions, no matter how noble or loving we might think we are being. Now, part of wisdom is also understanding that a good relationship will sharpen your character. One of my favorite proverbs is Proverbs 27:17 that says, "Iron sharpens iron, and a person sharpens his friend." See, good friendship is not merely about companionship. It's about personal formation. Just as iron becomes sharper as it is being rubbed against other iron, people grow wiser through close relationships that involve honesty, correction, encouragement, and accountability. A truly good friend does not just simply agree with everything we say or think. Rather, a good friend will help refine our judgment, expose our blind spots, strengthen the parts of us that are weak. This kind of sharpening may not always feel comfortable and likely won't ever, but it's meant for our good. And in the end, wisdom appreciates being corrected and guided to being better. The idea of friends helping improve one's character and life habits is also addressed in Proverbs 27:6, which says, "The wounds of a friend are faithful, but an enemy multiplies kisses." A real friend may sometimes say things we don't want to hear about ourselves, but the truth is necessary for growth. An enemy, however, may offer all kinds of praise or approval or say good things about us to further their agenda, while allowing us to maybe continue toward our own harm and foolishness. The wound of a friend is not cruelty or intentional injury to us. The wound is discomforting and sometimes feels awkward to being shown that we're wrong or in need of change. The feelings don't change the reality that correction is when it's lovingly given out of loyalty and care is very needed and helpful. Rather than these kisses from an enemy that are not loving, they only offer some false comfort and deception that hides real danger. Therefore, Proverbs teaches that a true friend must have both kindness and courage. Now, taken all together, Proverbs presents friendship and community and neighbors both as a blessing and responsibility, because friends can sharpen and correct and comfort and reveal to us things in ourselves that we might not otherwise see. But our relationships also always test our wisdom. We need to learn to receive correction without allowing our pride to interfere, to speak truth without being harsh, to handle conflict without being angry, and to refuse allowing gossip to spread from our lips. The wise life is not a life that's lived in isolation. It's lived in community, it's lived in relationships. And therefore, it's lived among people where love, humility, and honesty, and self-control must be practiced every day. In our next session on the Road of Wisdom, we're going to continue looking at a couple more topics on what wisdom teaches. We'll see you then.